Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Night Shadows. I'm Stuart Best, where the paranormal is normal, where that which you thought you knew, you didn't, and where the future can be known if you know exactly where to look.
Well, thank you for listening tonight, and we've got a special faculty. He just called. I'll get him on the line. Dan. Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Hey, Stuart. How are you, brothers? Good talking to you.
Yeah. Now, we got Larry on the phone. And, boy.
Hey, Larry.
Hi, Stuart, and welcome, Daniel.
Well, thank you, sir.
So, there's a lot going on. I guess one could say a lot to talk about with everything that's happening. And particularly with Trump declaring a national emergency. So I definitely want to get into some of that. I also want to talk about your new book, and we should go down through all that. And that's kind of a fascinating series of interviews you did. And Midnight Strikes, folks. Judgment Unleashed, you need to order that. The Holdings and Quayle interviews, and there's a lot of stuff there, and I want to get into all of that. But I wanted to read a few things here that we had asked, Dan, people to write in with what they were seeing to try to get a feel of what's really going on out there. Mm-hmm. And I want you to comment on some of this for sure. And you too, Larry. Here's the first one. Hello, my granddaughter is ill with a respiratory illness. She is 18. She went to the doctor, and he would not test her upon her request. They said it was not necessary. She lives in rural Arizona. Government did promise that there would be tests for all. Well, now they're backing off that, of course. Here's another one. No toilet paper or tissues. Some nice quality paper napkins still available. A few skinny rolls of paper towels. A few wet wipes. The men's department might have cloth handkerchiefs, but I didn't look. No Clorox. A lot of tuna, chili, and soup sold. But still about half was in stock, flour wiped out, fresh chicken, some water back in stock, not much, fresh organic carrots, golden Yukon potatoes, sweet potatoes, all gone, a lot of broth sold, dried bean soup mixes, some shelf almond milk, all dried beans and rice sold in cellophane packages. Boxes, mixes, and good supply. Most fresh meat still available. Snowing here in, I think she's probably talking about Spokane or Spokolo, wherever that is. Anyway, what's your comment on those two?
Well, I actually have I have personal experience with both of those. my daughter, who is nearly 21, she's my only daughter and the mother of my grandson, my own grandson. And she has been sick for probably about 2 weeks or so. And she was having a hard time catching her breath, a respiratory thing, and throwing up, as a matter of fact. So I took her to our family doctor, and they tested her for the flu. And as it turned out, she had the flu B. So they gave her something to keep some food down, and they said, "Well, you probably need to get your grandson tested." And so we went straight from there, and we tested my grandson, and he had also contracted flu B. Now, in a situation like this, Stuart and Larry, you know, people are prone to panic. And this is why, and I'm not trying to tout my own book, but this is why I said that Midnight Strikes was a warning of things to come and that people needed to know what was coming in order to prepare what was coming on this side of those events. So here's a perfect example. You have President Trump today declaring a national emergency, as he should have done. I mean, he probably should have did it a couple weeks ago, but you have people that have a knee-jerk reaction to this kind of pandemic, right? So what they are doing is they are buying stuff off of the shelves. Now, I also have an experience with the grocery store because I just got back there a couple hours ago, and I can concur well with most of what the other writer said, except all the meat was gone, all the hamburger, all the chicken, all the most of the packaged beef were gone. Potatoes are gone, eggs are gone. Now, I live in Kentucky, rural Kentucky, so it's not like I'm in the middle of the city. But everything else that your listener wrote, I found the very same thing. Now, I went to the store today to shop for my wife and I. And yesterday, interestingly enough, I took my daughter to the store to shop. And I was pushing the cart with the baby in it, and she was getting what she needed. And I should have shopped yesterday because yesterday, although all the toilet paper was gone and all the paper towels, well, most of the paper towels were gone, there was meat and there was, but today it's gone. So the difference between yesterday and today is a declaration by the president saying that there's a national emergency. So you have this knee-jerk reaction by the public about what's coming. Now, that doesn't mean, and audience, you need to hear me, okay? That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be prudent and that we shouldn't prepare. That's not what I'm talking about. But what I am talking about is that when we make preparation, we do so logically. We don't do so emotionally. Now, what this caused me to do when I went there yesterday and there was no toilet paper, I wasn't even looking for toilet paper, Stuart. It's just that I'm going to need toilet paper for the next couple of weeks. So I asked the lady, you know, one of the ladies that shop for you. They have these, it's a Kroger, so they have these shoppers that roll around these carts. And I asked her, I said, well, what's the deal? What else is missing here? What, you know, when can we expect some back? And she looked at me. She said, well, we just got a email this morning saying that don't expect the toilet paper and the paper towels to be restocked anytime soon. She got this from the warehouse. They got this from the warehouse. Now, that was very disconcerting. And that's probably because a lot of it comes from China, I would think, anyway. But what that caused me to do is I went looking for toilet paper, even though I didn't need any. And I happened to find some at a smaller store and paid an exorbitant price, but I bought like four big old things of it. This is an example of people panicking in the middle of, well, actually at the beginning of a crisis. If they're panicking now at the beginning of a crisis, guys, what's it going to be like when coronavirus really rolls into town?
Well, Larry had an experience about that. Larry, you want to pipe in here? Because this is right on target, what he just said.
Well, that's true, and I'm somewhat like Daniel, and I live pretty rural too. No big cities near or anything as such. And I had a friend that he, matter of fact, he texted me again this evening. And a lot of the stores, toilet paper and towels and et cetera, was wiped out. And a lot of the like beans and rice, et cetera. But I went to a small dollar store in a small town near me. And I wasn't even actually going for toilet paper or any of that because I prudently had already taken care of that. But when I got there, there was somebody with about three buggies of toilet paper. I mean, three whole buggies of toilet paper, and he paid for it with a credit card, and everybody was mad at him because he had got so much of it being hog and taking it out of the store. And you had some people on one side, you know, mad at him because he was getting it, and they didn't get any. And then you had others that were saying, you're an idiot. This is nothing but a hoax. And so you've got all these two sides arguing and fighting, and he got his papers and left. But I'll tell you what, today I went to a small dollar store, and the people were fussing and arguing because they was out of good toilet paper, I perceive. And they brought up some real low-grade toilet paper that the dollar store had and was trying to sell. And they were going to argue with the dollar store over the price. And so, yeah, just like you saw, Daniel, if you want it, you pay for it. If you're really prudent, you get it ahead of time. But otherwise, it seems to be getting worse by the day.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's kind
well,
of... yeah, go ahead, Daniel. Go ahead.
I forgot what I was going to say, Stuart. Go ahead.
Well, it's just, you know, I mean, this is happening all over the country, and with the declaration of emergency, and I looked up what it means when he brought up this law that he's bringing out. It's actually FEMA, and it's actually the Department of Homeland Security, but
surprise,
which they did
surprise.
Not mention.
Yeah.
And
surprise.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just said surprise, surprise. You know, this. You know, in Midnight Strikes, there's a whole section on FEMA camps, and I came to this conclusion early on. This was probably about a month ago, just after I got done with the book. It was at the printers; it hadn't come out yet, and I had done all this research on FEMA camps and talked to people that have really looked into this, people that worked for the government at one time, people that worked for Homeland Security or FEMA, and they had the inside skinny. And then I began to contemplate what would it mean. This is around the time that China was burning bodies and burying bodies. And I thought, you know, wait a minute, what if FEMA camps, we've been saying for the longest time that FEMA camps were prison camps for, and Steve actually goes into this in the book, but that FEMA was prison camps for the red, the green, and the blue list. The blue list are the people that will get reeducated and everybody else will be killed. But as you know, and your listeners know, FEMA camps have incinerators in them. And I thought, what if these huge FEMA camp compounds with barbed wire that is facing in so people can't get out and all of the security keep people in and incinerators, what if those FEMA camps were actually in case of a contagion, were actually in case of plague in order to dispose of bodies, to treat and dispose of bodies? Now, why I bring this up is there's an interesting report called the I think it's called the I can't I just had a brain fart the Deagle Report, I think is what it's called.
Yes,
but Deagle. The Deagle Report actually, and they're using the government's numbers, by 2025 they say that the population according to the government, to their government sources, will be reduced by 80%. Now, how could it be that, and they've stuck to their guns, they've been berated for those numbers, prove it and all the rest. You have a bunch of naysayers, saying, no, that's not true. It's the government's own numbers. So consider this for a second, guys. What if the government knows full well that a contagion was going to be released and expects deaths in the millions? And they need a place for these people to go in order to treat them and the ones that die to dispose of their bodies, i.e. incinerators. What if that's what FEMA camps are really all about? And sure, they can put dissidents in there as well, but what if they knew this was coming and the end result is, in fact, the culling of the population. That's
well,
what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going on. This is phase one of the culling operations. All you got to do is go back to the Georgia Guidestones. And 6.5 billion reduction in population for the globe. That's quite a reduction. The only easy way for them to do that without getting caught, basically, is through a pandemic. Because you can argue over, well, China did it, the CIA did it, whoever, deep state did it, doesn't really matter. Because you can argue over that, but you got no proof, and there never will be any proof. And so they can wash their hands of that. This reminds me, though, and I'd like Larry's comment on that, Red Elk, the Native American shaman guy, and I interviewed him and actually did a video interview with him, and he said that he didn't know what it was. He had a vision. He said that Papa, he refers to the Lord as Papa, gave him a vision of the end times. And much of what he was shown has already come to pass. And he said that something happened in the eastern part of the United States that literally killed hundreds of thousands of people. There were so many of them that they were thrown into boxcars and dumped out in the Aurores, out in the Badlands, and I guess probably burned out there, kind of like what China was doing. And then we had that mysterious black rain that hit Japan that they think maybe is from the all the burning. And we did have those maps. I can't remember, what is it, Larry? Sulfur dioxide that shows up? Remember those maps that had those splotches, and they said that comes from burning human bodies, burning flesh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's
so
true, Stuart.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that you're exactly right, and I've often wondered, you know, I watched that video you did with Red Elk. I knew of him, and you know, we talked by letter occasionally, and, you know, He saw a lot of things, and he clearly said that there were so many bodies out there that they loaded them in rail cars and took them by rail to the Dakotas, to the Auroras and low places in the Dakotas, and piled them up and burned them out there. But he never knew what really killed those people, never did know. And I was going to mention, too, and get your opinion, Daniel, and you too, Stuart, ironically, and you know, I posted, and you, Daniel, you read my post anyway, too, you and Stuart both. I posted about an earlier book in 1981 by Dean Koontz. Now, he actually put the book out, and you know, as under a pen name, Lee Nichols. But they actually got the book and, you know, turned it into a Dean Koontz book, and in it, and I'm not going to go through all the details, but in it, he put in that book about a bioweapon that was in the future, and it would be called Wuhan 400, and it would be out of China, and it was the perfect bioweapon, and that's what the book says, and I sent Stuart images of that from the book, and ironically, and all you both know Lou Dobbs, you know, he'll say anything, but he usually is very accurate. Anyway, today, believe it or not, today, Friday, Lou Dobbs, at the top of his hour as he was leading off, basically, he showed a book of The Eyes of Darkness by Dean Koontz, and showed in yellow the Wuhan 400 from China bioweapon. And he said that this was going around, he said, but the mainstream media and the government and all seemed to be having a fit about it being out there, and said it was nothing but fiction. It was just a fiction novel. Now, when I heard that, you know, Daniel, I know you've actually turned the word fiction into faction, and Stuart has actually said that everything he was saying was fiction unless it happened. And so what do you think? You guys know a little bit about this. And by the way, I know Dean Koontz. Now, let me clarify that. I know Dean Koontz because, matter of fact, I sent him a badge from Oklahoma one time because of one of his thrillers that had a sheriff in it. And, you know, so I emailed him, and, you know, I do know of him, and he knows of me over the years. And I emailed him about this. Well, guess what? No comment. And I've not seen him on any radio shows or TV shows or anything. Dean Koontz is being very quiet. Now, he's a very articulate novelist. And matter of fact, you know, Daniel, you remind me a little bit of Dean Koontz. You write about stuff that walk in the dark and things like that. But what's interesting is the fact that what's the odds? Now, this is just what's the odds. What's the odds, Daniel, that an author back in 1981 would, under a pen name, put out something about a perfect bioweapon, not just a bioweapon, a perfect bioweapon, and later on then attribute it to himself again under his name, Dean Koontz, The Eyes of Darkness, and actually put in there Wuhan 400, the name of it, and China and the perfect bioweapon? What's the odds of that popping up in a fiction novel, Daniel?
I don't know what the odds are, brother, but I got it. First of all, thank you for bringing that to everybody's attention, because I actually saw that that write up that you did, because I am on your email list. And folks, if you're not on Larry's email list or you haven't been getting his emails, you need to make sure you sign up with him, because he gives you good stuff and stuff you need to know. So you did send that out, and I saw that. And interestingly enough, this outbreak of coronavirus is in fact in Midnight Strikes. And Steve Quayle and I talk about this. It was it had come out just before we were going to press. And we talked about it briefly, and we basically, through various sources, came to the conclusion that is, in fact, a bioweapon, and it is out of China, and it actually leaked out of, at least this is what Steve said, it leaked out of a bioweapons lab in Wuhan. Now, along with that, I was on Coast to Coast a couple weeks ago, or a couple days ago, I should say, last week. And George Norrie was asking me about this very same thing. And because, Larry, you'd already prepared me with your announcement, I was well aware of it. And he asked the very same questions. What are the odds? Now, I don't know, Dean. And, you know, he's a great author. I mean, I've read many of his books, seen a few movies made out of his books. As you know, I mean, there are things when I wrote As the Darkness Falls, I didn't have any sources, and the Lord, you know, basically gave me ISIS in 4 years before they ever became an entity. So, and I wrote about that in that book. So it's entirely possible that Dean just was inspired to do this, or it could be something else. But the fact is that it is a warning, whether it's a warning from the globalist who wanted to say, this is how we're going to kill you, or it's a warning from God himself, or even the devil for that matter, saying, hey, this is how we're going to kill you, or the Lord saying, hey, watch out, this is how they're going to try to kill you. The fact is that we have this information, and it's out there. I don't know what the odds are, but I would say that, guys, it's game on. And, you know, I just spent, because of all that's going on in the world today and all that I'm seeing, I wanted to make sure that I was prepared for you and your audience. And so, you know, I do a lot of research, but rather than doing research and rather than boning up about things that I already know about, I spent about, more than an hour in worship. And worked a little bit as I was doing. I'm doing graphic work so I could listen to music and worship at the same time. It's kind of hard because you got to raise your hands, and I get distracted. But one of the things that the Lord gave me in the middle of that time, waiting to come on the air with you all, was this. And it is this simple phrase, prepare the way of the Lord. Because what we are seeing right now
is the very beginning of sorrows. It's the very beginning of tribulation. And part of what Midnight Strikes is, it's a declaration from our soon-coming King that this is the time. We have been warned, we have been told in the Bible, and people can, you know, discount this the Bible all they want to, but the fact is that these things are now coming to the forefront. We will have to deal with these things. Now, I believe that eventually the coronavirus will burn itself out. It has to. How many people will die between here and there, I don't know. But it will eventually burn itself out. But life as we know it after that will be forever changed. Because what Trump basically did today and what you will see being implemented in the coming days is medical martial law. Let me tell you a story. You know, there's a a good friend of ours. This is Kentucky. I live in Kentucky. It's not like I live in, you know, California, and although I used to, or New York or something like that, or even Oregon, where it's very liberal, right? This is Kentucky. We just got a new governor a few months ago. He is a liberal as opposed to the conservative governor. And there's a lot of talk that that election was stolen. But the fact is that the leadership had changed. Now, we have some really good friends that are probably our age, a little bit younger, whose mother, is in a nursing home. And the governor just last week declared, and he did this on the guise of protecting our elderly. So what he essentially did is quarantined all of the senior homes in Kentucky. In other words, the people that these elderly depend on, their loved ones, to come see them, to come check on them, they can't go see them. They will not be let. They will not let them in. They will not be admitted. So they are basically confined. Now, when I say that what we saw today was the implementation of medical martial law, make no mistake, audience, about the time that we are in. What will occur in the next few weeks, in the next few months, will not go away at the burnout of the coronavirus. The life that we once knew in America has forever been changed by this pandemic, whether it be real or not real. One of the things that George Norrie kept saying to me was that, you know, this is, you know, it's no worse than the flu. 49,000 people die every year from the flu, and I think it's just an overreaction. What do you think? And I said, George, it doesn't matter if it's real or it's not real. The effects are the same. When you look at the stock market and you see that in one day, although it rebounded today, when you see in one day, and it's overbought anyway, but oversold, but when you see in one day that it's, you know, it's down almost 10% in a day, and that they got to take measures to keep it from crashing, this is serious, and it's not going to stop there. So the overall impact of the coronavirus, aside from the sickness, right, the economic impact, the impact to our liberties, it's all very, very real, audience. And life, as we know it in the United States, is forever changed. It is the beginning of that time that the Word talks about of the Great Tribulation, and we need to prepare for that right now. Now, I'm not saying go out and buy tons and tons of toilet paper so that Larry doesn't get any when he goes to the store. What I am saying is that spiritually you need to prepare, physically you need to prepare, but do so in a logical manner. Do so in a way that makes sense. You can't eat toilet paper. and there are things that you should have done, that we should have done, because I'm just as guilty as everybody else, months ago that I had not done, that I am now doing now. But the fact is that there are things that you can do on this side of the worst of this disaster before it gets really bad. And, folks, it's going to get bad. Because, whether it's a real sickness or not, it doesn't matter. The effects are still the same. Guys, there's no toilet paper on the shelves.
Yeah, to add to what you just said, I was listening to the Minnesota governor and they declared a state of emergency in Minnesota, and it looks like they're in the process of locking down Minneapolis-St. Paul area, although they didn't really say that. But what he did say was kind of interesting, because what he said was, well, this is an emergency, and this thing could go on for months or maybe even more than a year. And he mentioned continuity of government several times. I mean, there's your clue. This is, folks, this is the beginning of, they can call it medical martial law, but it's really martial law, military martial law. Probably the Blue Helmets, the UN, will get into this act fairly rapidly because they have that option in their charter, of which we are signed on to, and it's to protect the civilians. And it's a perfect bioweapon. And the more they, now they're saying it's airborne. And so this is going to get very, very interesting. When you hear a governor talking about continuity of government, and maybe it'll go on for over a year, you're being told something, because all the states now, one by one, are declaring this martial law. And I heard Trump say that every state was to set up their emergency centers. Now, what does that mean, Daniel and Larry? What do you think about that one?
Go ahead, Larry.
Well, you know, also, and Daniel, I know you used to live in California, and you finally got out of that place, you know, and I have heard and read some information where Newsom, that California governor there presently, has indicated that he believes the state needs to control all the food stuffs, the restaurants, the hospitals, you know, all the whole, I guess you could say, infrastructure, basically. So I think what we're going to see, though, is each state is going to operate just a little differently than the other state. I know that Texas will be different, New York will be different, California, you're in Kentucky, Daniel, it'll be different. I think there's going to be nobody across the country will probably see exactly the same situation going on. And it seems to me, and I'd like your opinion, Daniel, it seems to me that instead of this being, and you probably watched The Stand, you know, Stephen King's old movie. It's not really going to be like that, but this is more slow moving. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Stuart. You mentioned Minnesota. That's a liberal governor, and this is not a political statement. I'm just pointing out the obvious. And Larry, you mentioned California. That's a liberal governor. I mentioned Kentucky. That's a liberal governor. And what you see in those areas are this clamping down and this gathering of power to themselves, right? Because you know, these days the Democratic Party is, whether you like it or not, is socialist. It just is. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Their foundation is that, and that, again, it's not a political statement. It's just the way it is. This is what socialism does. They gather power to themselves to a central location, and this is what you're seeing. So I think, Larry, to your point, is what you're going to see are those states that have a liberal governor or a government type, you're going to see the centralization of power, where states like, and I think Texas is probably conservative governor, although I'm not sure, states like Texas will be less ready to act in that manner. But it, you know, I don't think it matters. I think we're going to see it in all 50 states eventually, and what you're going to see is medical martial law all over this country until the president himself declares medical martial law for the country. You know, interestingly enough, China is now saying that, in spite of what I just reported to you about this being a Chinese weapon, they're saying that the U.S. Went in there and dropped it off, that we did that to them in China. which is crazy. I mean, the finger pointing's already started. And this is what I mean. It's only the beginning of what we are going to see, because at the other side of this, imagine, this is affecting everything across the board. It's affecting manufacturing. It's affecting the financial sector. It's affecting food production. So you have, you know, all of these Chinese that cannot work and cannot produce food. How long before, and in addition to the crazy weather that we had last year and what I think that we will see this year, how long before people start starving and a war breaks out to you know, do the Great Reset? Now, I think – now, this is the scary part, as if audience, this whole conversation is not scary enough. But I think what we are seeing is a repeat. Now, think about this, guys, and I want to get your opinions on this. What we are seeing, I believe, is a repeat of the 20s, well, the late teens, the 20s, and eventually the 30s. In other words, what happened in the late teens is the Spanish flu. Shortly after the Spanish flu, or concurrent with that, was World War One. Then after World War One, we saw the crash. And it wasn't, you know, the Great Depression wasn't just great in the United States. It was great all over. And then we saw the Great Reset of World War II. So I believe that you are seeing, although accelerated, you are seeing that very same model used again by the globalists to eventually get us to a one-world government, which they really want to be at. But I think this is what I mean. You're only seeing the beginning of tribulation because they've pulled the trigger. This was the first salvo over the bow. This is the beginning of this plan to take us down this road. And Larry, I think it's going to be faster than we can even imagine. We're going to wake up in 2021 and find the world a different place.
Yeah, go ahead, Larry. Well, oddly enough. Rabbi Glazerson did a Torah code that mentions 5781 or 2021. I really haven't seen hardly any Torah activity involving that 5781 time frame, but it's really interesting. And this is what's interesting is Glazerson actually did the Torah code that linked the corona with Satan. He said the corona, Satan, and also recently did another Torah code that mentions Purim and the time frame we're in. Now, what this all kind of dovetails into a little bit is, and I don't want to get off on a rabbit trail, I'll just bring it up, and you guys go to it when you want to, but it time frames in with Nibiru, or the Planet X, or the Destroyer, or that if you will, interloper or intruder solar system, if you will. And it's so interesting, and I know, Daniel, because I looked at it in your book here, how that, you know, you mentioned, matter of fact, Tom Mack mentions Typhon, which is a French code expert, said is the word he found, talking about the Destroyer, Nibiru, and then I think Lucifer's Hammer was mentioned in your book, Midnight Strikes, Daniel, when you were talking to Quayle about the interviews there involving a Destroyer or Planet X, Nibiru, you know, all of those names, Nemesis, there's a lot of them, but I would like your opinion on, it does seem, and this is just my opinion, it seems like that, you know, not only is, you know, something of old coming back again, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Spanish flu and the, you know, the economic crash. And Daniel, I know personally that you are a person of interest in economics, if you will, or, and I know a lot of people don't know that about you, but you've been involved in economics or the financial world at one time, and you kind of pick up on clues of maybe where this is going. But, you know, what's interesting to me is all of this, and I want to say that again, all these things that we're talking about seem to be culminating or coming together about the same time frame. What do you think about that?
Well, let me just okay. It's time for a commercial break. A lot of what we're talking about, and I'm saying that tongue in cheek, but a lot of what we're talking about is in Midnight Strikes. And if you haven't got a copy, you need to go to DanielHollings.com and pick up a copy, because these things are happening now, and you know you need to know what's coming. So what Larry is talking about, this date and these things that are about to happen. And again, I'm not date setting. No, nowhere in the book is there are we date setting, but there are technologies that are being put into place. For instance, at the beginning of the book, we talk about surveillance and how one of the things that the very first thing that I asked Steve about was. Let me back up. There are 38 things in Midnight Strikes that the Lord showed Steve Quayle. Now, if you remember the story, Steve got saved at a Hal Lindsey conference or meeting. He came home to his mother's house in Bozeman, Montana. He walks into his room. Now, Steve was a really worldly guy before he knew the Lord. And something like that, he's too worldly now. I mean, not that he does anything that he shouldn't be doing, but he's a gruff character. I mean, he is matter of fact, and he believes what he believes, and he doesn't take any guff from people, you know, that disagree with him. That's just his personality. But the fact is, when he walked into his bedroom, Jesus was standing before him. Yeshua was standing before him in his bedroom, not in a dream, not in a vision, physically before him. And I've talked to him about this story several times, and he has recounted it exactly the same way. This happened. And so in this vision, not in vision, I take that back. In this visitation, the Lord told Steve about all these things that he was going to do with Steve's life. And then he showed him a panoramic of mankind's future, of our future on earth, what would occur. And then he told Steve that what would happen is that he would forget many of the things that he just showed him, but that just before they were going to come to pass, he would remind him of them. And so I think Steve had just finished his last book, Jesus, the Premise of the Promise, and I was on the phone with him, and he began to relate these things to me on the phone. I was like, Steve, you've got to write that in a book. He said, Daniel, I'm not led to write another book. I said I wasn't going to write another book, so I can't write another book. And I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I feel so strongly about the fact that, because you guys know, you've read my work before, many of the things that he saw or that the Lord told him, the Lord has also showed me. So it's like both of us came to the same conclusions, maybe in a little different way, but the Lord showed us both the same thing. So we were kind of joined at the hip in this effort. So I said, what I'll do is I'm going to ask you questions, and I will write the book. So you just tell me what I ask. And so what that did is that caused us to launch on this. It was nearly a year's worth of effort, but we started down this road of several conversations about those 38 things that he saw. And that what I used is those 38 things as a springboard for other issues, and I would ask him about other issues. I'd go back and I'd do my research. I do some development, and I figure out exactly what the Lord was trying to say, and that's how these issues ended up in Midnight Strikes. He didn't see all those things, and it wasn't his – Steve, I should say, didn't see all those things, and it wasn't his initiation those conversations. It was my initiation and my research that brought these issues to the forefront, and this is why the book is formatted in the way it is, so that we could get these things on the table in order to talk about them in a way that people could understand them and relate to them. But the point is that these things that we are talking about, audience, are in Midnight Strikes. Now, if you haven't got a copy, you need to get a copy
right away, because things are happening, and you want to know about what's going to happen next before they happen. Now, one of the first things that we address, and I gave you all this background so that I could say this, one of the first things that are in this that's in this book that we address is the coming, the fact that the Lord showed Steve that China's social credit system would be coming to the United States.
Yep.
Now, how do we know this? Well, all of these technologies that they will use to imprison the population, and yes, I chose my words very carefully, to imprison the population within this country are coming online, Larry, in answer to your question, by 2021. And actually, Steve addressed some of these technologies, I think, when he wrote Terminated. So many of those technologies that Steven talked about three or four years ago, are actually coming to fruition right now in 2021. So this is why I say that by the end of this year, you would not recognize, audience, this country that we live in, because that those the impetus for our imprisonment are already underway. And this is why you need a copy of this. You need to see what's coming. That's in Midnight Strikes. Here's the interesting thing. Most people, and you guys know this, I mean, most people, you go to work, you know, you get home, you have dinner, you hug your family and your kids, and, you know, you maybe sit in front of the TV for some time, then you go to bed and you do it all over the next day. Most people are not paying attention to what's going on in this country. There are so many things in that book that people need to know about that people are clueless. You know, this idea that our own government would want to instill the social credit system, the Chinese social credit system in the United States, is mind-boggling to people. They'll say, well, why would they want to do that? What's the evidence of that? Well, Midnight Strikes contains the evidence as to why they want to do that, the technical evidence, then the political evidence, then it also contains the sociological evidence of that, and then it talks about the spiritual evidence of that. And I know you guys both read the book. So one of the things that really intrigued me as I began to go down this road was, and Larry, I didn't know of this man until, again, honestly, if you don't get Larry's emails, you really should, because there's tons of stuff in there. Larry, you actually introduced me to, introduced me to Maurice Sklar's prophecies a few years ago. And this idea that he saw a web covering the earth is something that I've remembered, you know, for at least the last decade. This is what's happening. This earth is being used as a, how can I say this? This earth is being encompassed by a web of our own making. And that web will be our imprisonment. And it will be the means by which our own government and the other governments of the world enter or cause the mark of the beast to be in placed. And it will cause the governments of the world to usher in the Antichrist. It is the bestial system, but it is not, you know, what we would have once thought it was. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, when you read The Late Great Planet Earth, you thought it was going to happen. No, it has already happened. We just don't know it, guys.
Yep. Absolutely. And the web is most likely going to be brought in through 5G, 6G technology. And the reason they're using China, I've always thought that China is the model for the New World Order, and that's coming to pass. The reason they're experimenting over there is their dictatorship, and they can get away with it. And the social credit system is well developed here, actually. It's not social credits, it's your credit score. And now file for employment, they even check your credit score to find out if you're worthy. So it's coming in bit by bit by bit. They're just creeping it in. And now with this martial law declaration, they can finish the job really fast. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Daniel. It's amazing how this thing is going. In your book, let's go through some of this. You've got earthquakes, volcanoes, celestial catastrophes beyond comprehension. What did Steve see about that?
Well, you know, Steve just got done with Cascadia, the real big one. That's his latest documentary on the Cascadia subduction zone. And interestingly enough, guys, you know that I wrote about the Cascadia subduction zone years ago. It actually has a place in my books, and it was something that the Lord showed me. So when Steve began to talk about earthquakes and volcanoes and tsunamis, I was right there with him. And what I did is I uncovered through some of his contacts, but also other research that I had done, the fact that the Lord said that there would be earthquakes in diverse places. And, you know, you read that and you go, okay, what does that mean exactly? That, you know, that there's going to be earthquakes. What it really means is that there's going to be earthquakes in unexpected places.
Yes.
So you see places like San Andreas in California where people are always, because of the blockbuster movie and the other movies that have come out, and being from California, I can tell you that I'm well-versed in probably every movie that's come out about the big one in California. But you see places like Cascadia getting no mention at all. And one of the things that the Lord showed me when I was writing As the Darkness Falls, one of the few visions that I've actually had. I mean, I've seen a lot of things, but to fall down as if I were dead and see something, that's only happened a couple times. That's not happened a lot. But the Lord has given me glimpses of other things in my mind's eye that I've seen. But this particular vision, I saw this great tsunami that had been generated. I perceived it was from volcanoes, multiple volcanoes, that went off in the Aleutian Islands. And that volcano started a chain reaction that caused earthquakes, and it generated a huge tsunami that swept down all the coast of North America, all the way down to South America. And what it did is it caused the chain reaction of all the other volcanoes and earthquakes to go off. Now, that was when I wrote As the Darkness Falls, I saw that. And I wrote it in 2011, I think, and it came out in 2012, the first edition. So interestingly enough, when Steve begins, and I, you know, in that book, I actually did a bunch of research for Cascadia long before Steve and I ever talked about it, and I also compared that to some of the other faults along the line, and lo and behold, when Steve brings this up, his own sources about Cascadia, and goes into very, and this is in the book, audience, very specific detail about how Cascadia is acting right now, as well as other subsequent faults in the area, I could absolutely relate to what he was saying, because I'd already seen it. So this is what I mean about this book being so salient, so timely, that the work that is done in this book between myself and Steve's conversations is something that people really, really need to know. And it's not about selling books. It's about getting information into your hands. So leaving from there, there's a whole discussion. Well, actually, I guess it's in the general area, but there's a whole discussion of the Ridgecrest earthquake in California, what caused that. And then we also talked briefly, although he didn't really delve into it, although I've done a lot of work on this issue myself, with fault that runs through the middle of the country, the New Madrid Fault. And then we also talked about Puerto Rico and what is really going on there. So there's this whole discussion about a broad range of earthquakes. And we focus primarily on the United States because we live here. But there are earthquakes that are showing up and stress faults that are showing up throughout the whole world. There are volcanoes that are waking up all over the world. And we delve into much of that within the United States, places that you wouldn't even think about a volcano. For instance, Larry, you mentioned I'm from California, lived there a good number of years, even though I escaped when I joined the military. I don't know why I came back. I went to Bible college out there and didn't leave for 20 years. But I'm well versed in California. I did not know that there is a dormant or extinct volcano in the middle of the desert, not far from where I used to live, and it has been woken up. And what they are actually seeing with various instruments is the movement of magma under the surface of the earth. So we have entered into a time that we are entering into a season of great earthquakes. And that's exactly what the Bible talks about.
And as you got into celestial catastrophes, what does he see coming? Is this like meteor storms?
I don't want to give away too much at the end of the book, but we delve into celestial catastrophes toward the end of the book. Let me just say that Steve believes that the earth has been turned into an attractor of sorts, a magnet. And it's, he says this is a result of geoengineering, as well as other experiments that we have done, other mechanisms that mankind has used. But it has changed the polarization of the earth to actually make it like a magnet, so that we are actually now drawing in various heavenly bodies. And there's a lot of talk. What we did in the book is compared what the ancients saw within the skies to what we see in the Bible and what we will see in the near future. So there's this whole discussion about that. And yes, Larry, Nibiru does play a part of that discussion, and it has to. Now, I don't happen to think that Nibiru will occur within the next couple of years, because there are things that, and I could be dead wrong, I hope I'm not, I should say, but there are things that have to happen before that happens, because when Nibiru happens, all bets are off. Everything is far different than what it is right now, and there are prophecies that have to happen. There are things that have to happen according to the Word. So I believe that we have some time, but I think that we will see Nibiru in the near future anyway.
Larry, got any questions?
Well, and Daniel, I just wasn't talking about your economic background in a prior life to tell anybody about that. But what I was bringing up and kind of wanting your opinion on is you're watching the economics right now, and the way all of this is beginning to morph or change economically, worldwide, actually. What do you see coming in the financial area of all the nations?
Well, so one of the things that we have to understand is that the contagion, the derivative contagion that occurred in 2007, 2008, that caused the hiccup, and I will call it a hiccup because it will be a hiccup compared to what's coming. But that caused a downslide in the economy and the markets. It wasn't quite a crash, but it was pretty close. We were hours away from a significant crash, according to some of the sources that I had. But that contagion, instead of widening, this is a little complicated, but derivatives is just bad debt. I mean, I don't know how to make it any more simple than that for people. It's just bad debt. And so rather that, but see, the problem is they valued bad debt, so it looked like it was actually worth something. So rather than banks writing off this bad debt and taking a hit, because it would have meant that many more entities beside Lehman Brothers would fail, it would mean huge entities, this whole idea that too big to fail, if some of those too big to fail entities would have failed. So rather than that happening, they just spread it out to all the banks in the world. The central banks of the world agreed on this, and they just spread out this debt. So rather than dealing with it up front and getting rid of it to clean out the system, and it would have been very painful, but it would have been done. I mean, we could have very well saw a crash, but it would have been done. We wouldn't have to re-experience it. What they've actually done is they've multiplied the problem, because they have put bad debt on top of more bad debt now. And so you see banks like Deutsche Bank. Now, you know, we live in the United States. What the heck does Deutsche have anything to do with this conversation? Deutsche Bank is like the third largest bank in the world. I mean, it's absolutely huge, and they are barely hanging on by the skin of their teeth. I think I have no sources to back this up. I don't have anybody that's in the financial arena that I talk to anymore. But I think that much of this, the pumping that we've seen, when I say pumping the audience, you know, the Federal Reserve has been printing, well, digitizing dollars, and that money's not coming down to you and I. It's not coming down to, you know, Joe on the street. Where's it all going? I think a lot of it is going to prop up these banks across the world. And I think a lot of that money's actually went to Deutsche. They're not going to tell you that, because that would be American dollars going into a German bank, and that's not something that they want to share. But I think that in order to try to keep that bank afloat, because its demise would be disastrous for the world, not just Germany. It would be terrible for the world. So what I think we're seeing is that they have more than 10 fingers in the dike. There's not enough fingers, right? That you have cracks in the world's economic system, the world's financial system, and it is come to the point where it's like a rowboat. Okay, if you're in a rowboat and your boat starts leaking and you start bailing, that only works as long as you can bail out as much water that is in the boat. But once there's too much water to bail, and you can't bail fast enough, then the boat sinks. And so that's kind of what we're looking at with the world's economic system. What I think is occurring as a result of this contagion, if you will, is whether it be by design or not, manufacturing is virtually coming to a halt all across the world because people can't go to work. You saw this happen in China, and that's the perfect example of what will happen in everywhere else of the world that this thing gets to, and it will get everywhere. At the same time, you have – now, see, there's so many things, Larry – in this question. At the same time, you have China. There was a report where they were burning cash. They were literally burning their currency because their currency carried germs. They carried the coronavirus on it, and they were trying to kill the germs. So they literally torched billions and billions of yuan. And so this in Midnight Strikes, and I hate to keep touting the book, but I got to go back here. In Midnight Strikes, we talked about the drive
to a digital currency and how that would become the last currency, what would usher in the mark of the beast, and why they needed a digital currency for this to happen. So you have China, who was already touting a digital currency. They were already saying there's been reports that they have already developed a digital currency that is backed by gold, and they want to introduce it to the world as the world's reserve currency. I went into length in the book about talking about what it would mean when, not if, audience, but when the United States loses its place as the world's reserve currency, and it's already happening. People, this is what I mean. We don't pay attention to such things. It falls to a book like this to actually talk about such things. We are already there's a sniper's bullet pointed directly at the United States' head as the world's reserve currency. And when we are taken out as the world's reserve currency and another reserve currency comes in, world's reserve currency comes in, our life in the United States will change forever. I mean, we will never have what we have now. And so what this coronavirus has actually done, what this contagion has actually done, it's actually accelerated this. Because if, in fact, a digital currency comes as a result of them doing away from physical currency, we are one step closer to A, losing our place as the world's reserve currency, which is tantamount to a Great Depression, at least in this country, and B, it is what will be used for the mark of the beast. So
yes.
This is a very, very important point that people need to understand. This is what I mean by whether it's real or whether it's not real, whether the effects are real, whether there'll be, I think the CDC said that, I read a report last week that 18 million people were going to die from this in the United States. At least that's what they were estimated. Now, that's not quite as much as the Spanish flu. The Spanish flu, I believe, killed 3% of the world's population at the time. That would be hundreds of millions now. But the point is that if in fact, it doesn't even do that, you know, it turns out to be like, and I don't think so, but if it turns out to be like just a standard flu, it doesn't matter. This game plan has already been put into motion. If they get a world's reserve currency, a change in the world's reserve currency and a digital currency as a result of this, and wholesale, sectors or parts of our economy collapse because of this, then they get what they want. So, Larry, that's a long answer to your question, but the results of the coronavirus are far more reaching. And listen, I'm not talking from a greedy capitalist standpoint anymore. At least I'm not that guy anymore. There was a time, I'm ashamed to say that I was, but I'm not talking from the standpoint of a greedy capitalist anymore. I'm just telling you that what is going on as a result of the coronavirus will have far-reaching effects across our financial system. And again, I keep saying this, but the world will never be the same after it.
But you know what's interesting, Larry? You had a thing from Hal Turner about the collapse of the Deutsche Bank. So, what can you recall what he said about that?
Yeah, matter of fact, I think I've got notes in front of me that I took from his site. Yeah, let me read this, and then maybe we can get Daniel's opinion. Now, I'm not saying this is true. I'm saying this is what Hal Turner posted. He says, "Remember, if Dutch bank stock dropped below 640, world is in trouble. Dutch bank stock has now dropped, and this was a couple of days ago, to 551. Get cash out of the bank now." He said there's flash traffic on all intel circuits, and this was covert intel, by the way. It wasn't public knowledge. And also, I remember about that same day or the next day, I saw something on Drudge that the Fed had pumped in $1 trillion or more into the system. Now, that I know most people that read that thought they pumped it in to help the U.S., but I'm wondering if, like Daniel said, they didn't help prop up Dutch. And the reason was, in his intel, it said that that what was dropping critically was Dutch Bank, Credit Suisse, Lloyds Banking Group, Royal Bank of Scotland, and Barclays. What do you think, Daniel?
Well, the I did sit in front, and I don't normally do this because, like, these days, you know, the financial sector, it drives me crazy because I understand it for what it is, a bunch of greedy so-and-sos, you know, looking to make a buck. But I you know, because I did spend so much time in another life, you know, dealing with such things, I sat in front of CNBC on my television the other day watching the market take a nosedive. I did see the report from yesterday saying that they pumped in $1 trillion. That wasn't over time. That was in a day. Never before have I ever seen the Fed pump in $1 trillion in a day. Now, understand, it's whenever they print a new dollar bill, whether it be digitized or print a new dollar bill, that dilutes the value of your dollar bills that you have in your pocket. So all of this printing will eventually bite us all in the butt, because it will mean that we actually have to pay more dollars for a loaf of bread than we did yesterday. If a loaf of bread costs you $1.50 today, it's going to cost you, $2 tomorrow or, you know, more. This is what happens when they continually print money like this. So when they come out and they print $1 trillion in a day and they disperse it, you know, I was thinking today, Larry, my pockets are relatively empty. You know, I didn't get any of that trillion. Did you guys get any of that $1 trillion?
Yeah. Well, a day's wages for a loaf of bread, right?
So where did all that money go? Larry, it had to go to the banks because the guy on the street didn't get any money. And so the fact is that somebody is making a – it is something that we used to talk about in the financial industry. It was money in motion. Whenever there is money in motion, there's money to be made, okay? And so when you see volatility, good or bad, in the market, there are people making money. Even if the market has taken a nosedive, and this is a little complicated, but if you've shorted, like if I was really, really smart and I thought this was going to happen, I would probably have shorted the financial sector yesterday because the financial sector took a nosedive. And in anticipation of that, if I shorted it, that means that I make money, that I'm betting that it's going to go way down. And that would have been a good bet. So the point is that when you see this volatility in the market or when you see the volatility in the economy, there's a reason for that. And that's generating big, big dollars. And I can't even – folks, when I talk big dollars, I'm talking big dollars. I'm talking billions of dollars. Somebody is making a ton of money, and it's not coming to the average guy on the street. So is it a perceived problem that Deutsche and the rest of these banks are going to collapse unless they are bolstered, or is it a real problem? Is it just – so is it a means for them to just make more money, or is it a real problem? I happen to think that it's both. I think in the process of this, they're maybe not them are making a lot of money, but somebody's making a lot of money because they're just printing dollars out of the air. The other side of that is that I think that they are scared to death that these banks are going to collapse, big banks, not – Lehman Brothers was relatively big for the United States at that time, and you saw the problems that it caused. But you take a bank like, I don't know, take a bank like, Bank of America or Wells Fargo. When those banks went under, that would be really bad. Or one of the other larger banks in the United States. If a bank like HSBC or a bank like Deutsche collapses, that has world implications.
So yeah, Larry, I mean, this is a very, very serious time, and this thing is far from over. It's only just started. I don't think they can keep it afloat. I think what you're seeing is the beginning of the end of the economic system that we have now. So what I think will happen now is that they will try to, I think anyway, they will try, instead of a hard crash, I think they're going to try to soften it, to make it a soft landing so that they can transition into something else. And I believe that something else will be a digital currency with somebody else as the world's reserve currency, and they're going to leave us, you know, fending for ourselves.
I was reading several articles where some of the countries were outlawing shorting. What would you make of that? You couldn't short.
That used to make me so mad. That would make me sick. Well, look, when I was actually in the market, I believed in a free market. And I believed in, how can I say this? I even forget the term that was, what's it called? Modern market theory. I think that's what it was. Where the market would be, regulated by itself, meaning that the demand of stocks and bonds and currency would drive the market, meaning that people would buy what they wanted to buy and sell what they wanted to sell, and the market would balance itself out. Now, what happens is that governments, because governments are who they are, they want to inject themselves into a situation because they have to. They have to find, you know, they have to show value in what they do for the public. What they would do is they would interject themselves in the middle of trading, and, you know, for instance, in 2008, I shorted what you're saying, actually. I shorted the financial sector because I anticipated that the financial sector was going to go down. They stopped all investments, shorting investments at that time. So they interceded at that time to keep the financial sector afloat. Now, that's all fine and good, but the problem is that they artificially interfered with it so that it wouldn't run its regular course. So when you say that some countries are outlawing shorting, I'd say that's not a free market. That is just, that's the government trying to make itself valuable in one way or another. Some banks, I hate to say it, but some banks need to go out of business. Only because they do bad business. So why would you reward bad behavior? I mean, if you were running a T-shirt company and you were selling your customers holy T-shirts or T-shirts that weren't printed correctly, or they had the wrong pictures on them, or the silk screen was bad, and that company would probably lose all its customers and go out of business. But what if the government came along and said, no, we happen to like this company. You know, we know people that know people there. So we're going to, give them some money so that they can stay in business. Same principle for a bank, only, on a much larger scale. When the government comes in and they decide what's good for you and I, as opposed to the free market deciding what's good for you and I, then we have a disparity of what's fair and what's not fair, because then the government determines what's fair or what's not fair. I happen to believe that there were a couple of banks that needed to fold. And again, back in 2008, if a couple of those banks did in fact fold because of their bad investments in derivatives, we wouldn't be facing this problem again, a much worse problem today than we were then. But because of the interference of, the government and the free market, this is what we're left with. So it doesn't surprise me that some governments are outlawing shorting at the moment, or at least temporarily stopping shorting. I don't know if they could outlaw it, but it doesn't surprise me at all.
switching subjects, you've got ancient and alien technologies in there. Can you briefly describe so people would know essentially what you're talking about in the book?
So this is actually this is one of those things. It's all Steve Quayle. one of the things that the Lord showed him was, and this is very interesting, that many of the areas that had been covered by ice, such as Antarctica or maybe the Arctic, the ice would begin to melt, and he saw ancient technologies, well, advanced technology that he knew to be extraterrestrial, uncovered. And, but it wasn't just those. I mean, they revealed hidden cities. It revealed UFOs. It revealed all this other stuff. So he actually saw all of this weird stuff, this strange stuff, being exposed, and it became the talk of the day. It became commonplace, and people understood it for what it was. Now, that actually leads to a broader discussion about disclosure, I think. Because, Stuart, you know, we're coming to a time when people are going to see things and are now seeing things that just don't make sense in our logical, everyday, modern mindset. See, the way we face things, new information, and this is only human, we will look at something and we'll try to categorize it and compare it to something else that we are familiar with. You know, we compartmentalize these things. We pigeonhole them so that we can understand those things and live with those things. So more than just the ancient technology that he saw and covered, he saw a variety of things that, and that, you know, I go into them in the book. He saw a variety of things that just didn't make sense in our normal life. And so, you know, the Bible says that in the last days that men's hearts will fail for fear at those things that are coming upon the earth. And so what we see in Midnight Strikes, at least in these things that Steve talks about with regard to ancient technology and other things, are all of these things that man has never seen in our modern age. Now, I'm not going to say never seen, because I believe that many of these things were seen in ancient days, and they've just come back. They're going to come back. But our modern minds, so I mean, we don't even know how to deal with these things. So people are going to go crazy because of the things that they're seeing, and that ancient technology is kind of part of that.
Well, get back to the coronavirus. In a recent simulation, a coronavirus killed 65 million people. We are woefully unprepared for a pandemic, was the headline. I don't have it where it came from, but that's kind of interesting because that's far, far worse than what we've all been told, correct?
Well, I mentioned, you know, I just saw the other day that it was, there was a study by a think tank that said it would kill 18 million, which is far worse than the same now. You're seeing 65 million. I think, honestly, guys, I think those are conservative numbers. I said that I thought it was a real thing. I said that I thought that the coronavirus was, in fact, far worse than the flu, and that the government is purposely downplaying it so as to not create a panic. Well, guess what? We already have a panic. It's already happening. I can't buy toilet paper. So the point is that if you look at China, the numbers, and I got to be careful here because there are some sources that we have, you know, that are releasing information about what is really going on in China. Guys, they are –
burying bodies, or not burying, putting them in big pits and burning them, which goes to what you were saying about the black rain in Japan. They actually rolled into Wuhan, and I don't know if they've done anyplace else. This is the only report that I saw. I'm sure you saw a similar report. Something like 40 mobile incinerators were rolled in. Now, why would you do that? If it were only, you know, a handful of people that died, why would you need 40 mobile incinerators to burn bodies in Wuhan? So I think that so along with that, before I tell you what I think, along with that, they are now saying that the incubation period is 36 days. That's what I read yesterday, that it's 36 days, that you don't know that you have it for 36 days. In addition to that, they're saying that it at least is 10 times more deadly than the flu. Now, I happen to think it's probably more than that, but the real numbers about what is going on, according to the sources that I've seen, it is 18 million is nothing. The number you just gave, 65 million, is nothing. What is really going on in China is downright scary. And if that is real, if those numbers are real, the numbers that are not being reported are real, then this is worse than the Spanish flu. And the Spanish flu,
I think, it's far worse.
There
was a fellow that released a video. I don't know if you saw it yet. Where he videotaped a part of Wuhan. The only lights that are on are streetlights. All the big buildings are black. There's everybody's gone. So when Z said he went to Wuhan, probably because there's nobody there. And so I went on Flight Radar 24, and there are virtually no flights going in and out of Wuhan now at all. I think there were two in or four in and four out. And that's it. So we're being lied to. We got about 3 minutes to go. So any last word, Larry, or any last questions?
Yeah, I was thinking of something I'd forgot for a few years. And when Daniel mentioned the mobile crematoriums or whatever you want to call them, I do remember a few years ago that there was some reports surfaced in America. I believe Quayle may have posted it, and also Alex Cuppett, about intel that the U.S. had some mobile crematoriums, trucks that could get rid of bodies, but that suddenly all went away. I don't know. That just came to mind.
Well, most of your FEMA camps, from what I gather, are not most of them, but some of them have these huge crematoriums. So, anyway, Daniel, final word here.
Well, so the question I want to ask you, audience, is given all of this, even if it's only 10% correct, even if all the crazy stuff that you just heard, even if there's only 10% of it that's true, how will you respond? What is your life going to be like in this new world? This is a world where we are waking up to the Great Tribulation. And you need to prepare spiritually and physically. You need to make sure that you're walking with the Lord. You need to make sure that you have a relationship with Him. I'm not talking about punching, you know, your card at church. I'm talking about on your face, repenting and talking to Him. This is what Midnight Strikes is about. It's not designed to scare people to death. It's designed to cause you to act to repentance. So get your copy today, DanielHoldings.com. You can go on SteveQuayle.com and get it as well. But the fact is that the world as we know it, guys, has changed forever.
Yeah, unfortunately, and it's coming much faster than I think most people realize. Larry, final word.
Yeah, I would just leave people with this word. It's not whether I know Jesus or not. It's whether He recognizes me. And this thought's been in my spirit the last few days. Does the coronavirus recognize Jesus in me?
Good point. Good point. That ought to be something for everybody to chew on. We're coming up at the end, folks. There's absolutely no question. And Daniel, thanks a lot for coming on. We'll have to have you back. The amazing interview. There's so much going on. I mean, I don't know how anybody keeps up with it all. It's just horrendous. But and thank you, Larry, for coming on. And we really appreciate everyone. And thanks for tuning in and listening, everyone. And we'll see you next week, the good Lord willing. Thanks a lot, everyone. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Stuart.